Welcome to the College Knowledge Podcast, sponsored by the College Planning Network and Paradigm Financial Group. Whether you're searching for that right fit college, applying to college, or figuring out how you're going to afford it all, you're in the right place. You'll hear from deans, admissions counselors, student athletes, and scholars from esteemed universities and colleges around the country. We'll dig deep to uncover their insight and unique experiences. So whether you're a student gearing up for college or a parent with college-bound kids, sit back, relax, and listen. Like you, we have lots of questions. Our guests have the answers, and we're excited to share them with you. Let's get started. Here at Elite Collegiate Planning, we are able to send students to private schools for nearly a fraction of the cost of public schools. Visit our website, elitecollegiateplanning.com, to learn more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of College Knowledge. I am your host today, Mr. Joe Kearns. Pleasure to be with you. I've got Niall behind the desk, and Niall, I've got an interesting little fun fact. I don't know if you knew, but it's Women's History Month, the month of March. And Niall, I don't know if you knew this, but there are approximately right now 26 active women's only colleges in the United States. I don't know if you knew that, but how about this one? That back in 1960, there was 280. So we've actually gone down in the women's only colleges.
Did not know that.
Well,
thank you, Joe.
Now you know. So if that's something you're looking for, right, as a student, make sure that realize, hey, there's 24 schools out there that are women only. We are very excited for our guest today. I have a whole page of her list of honors and awards. Professor Lisa Bullard from NC State. She is a professor and director of undergraduate studies at the Department of Chemical and Biomolecular Engineering. Professor Bullard, thank you so much for being on the show today.
I'm really excited to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. So we always like to know a little bit of backstory. You know, what was, you know, your pathway to where you got today? How did you find your passion? Where did you start? What was your life like picking out colleges? How far back does your story go?
That's a great question. When I was in middle school and early high school, I really enjoyed journalism and photography. I was on the yearbook staff. And I loved writing, and I really thought that my future was going to be in some sort of journalism field, or perhaps even a photographer for National Geographic. You know, like all kids think they want to do something glamorous like that. Yeah. And then I took chemistry in high school, and I thought, wow, I really like this. And in fact, my chemistry teacher said, you know, if you like chemistry, you should be a chemical engineer. And I said, okay. You know, both my parents were in banking and had no technical background at all. Neither of them went to a four-year institution. So I really leaned heavily on my teachers. And my teachers have always been heroes to me. And when I look back, they were instrumental in shaping my life and my career path. So as a junior, I took chemistry. As a senior, I took physics. And I really liked physics too. And so I thought, well, you know, maybe this is a career I could pursue, even though I knew nothing about it. I knew no engineers. And so as a high school student, I was not very well informed, but I trusted my teachers and decided to apply to NC State for chemical engineering. And I'm so glad I did. It changed my life, obviously, and my career. And so that was sort of the way that I found my way to engineering.
Mm-hmm. And it's such a recurring theme that we have with so many of our guests, the idea of mentorship and listening to mentors, people that say, hey, I think you would be really good at this. And then you realize, well, sometimes people can see things in us that maybe we don't see when we look in the mirror, and you do have specific strengths. So it's a story we hear constantly, in the ability to use mentors. And one of our very first episodes, we got a great quote from Dr. Kenyon Bonner. He was the dean at University of Pittsburgh, and he said, lift while you climb. And he had this mantra that people always lifted him up. And as he was climbing, he had to lift people up behind him. And he loves becoming a mentor after he was mentored so well. I'm sure that's the same. I'm sure there's a lot of stories that you can have of people that you've mentored along the way as well. But just before we move on, how important is that, even at the high school level, right, to have a good relationship with teachers and listen to them and basically ask for help, or ask why do you think that, you know, chemical engineering would be a good fit for me. You saw something, but really thought, how, why should students use that so much, right? Use it to their advantage.
That's a great question, Joe. I think that often students might feel a little bit timid to approach their teachers in high school in a mentoring relationship. But, you know, the teacher has seen so many different folks come through their classroom. They have seen their students go on to be successful in different fields. And so a lot of times they do have that intuition and also that perspective where the student may not see it in themselves, but the teacher does. And certainly as a teacher at NC State for 23 years, I can think of many instances where students either lack the confidence or just lack the knowledge of what options were available to them. Mm-hmm. And just saying, hey, have you considered graduate school? Or I think you might be good at research. And just a casual comment from a teacher or a professor can change someone's life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And again, one of those things that we hear all the time. So you went to NC State. You're still there. What was it? Was it a straight path right from school into the professor? What happened, you know, once you got to college? What was your pathway? Was it exactly, you know, like you said, it wasn't maybe everything I thought it was at first, but it obviously led, it was the right decision for you, and it opened up exactly, you know, a wonderful career. So you go to NC State. What happens after that?
So while I was at NC State, I was sort of trying to figure out, okay, so what aspect of chemical engineering would I like? And I had several internships. And interestingly, each internship showed me what I didn't want to do. So I had one internship at DuPont making sodium cyanide. I thought, that's not really it. And then I had another internship at Argonne National Lab working with fuel cells in a more of a research role. That's okay, but not quite. And then I had an internship in Washington, D.C. in the area of engineering public policy, which kind of intrigued me. But I thought, well, that's kind of outside what I had thought about. And so at the end of my NC State career, I thought, I probably need to go to graduate school to go deeper into this field, because I'm really not sure where I want to focus. And I loved school and I wasn't ready to stop being a student. And also a little part of me said, you know, I never want anyone to say, oh, you have to have a PhD for that. I said, okay, well, I'm going to check that box so that those options will be available to me. Mm-hmm. So I chose to go to graduate school in chemical engineering at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh, which was a great experience. And my focus there was process design and optimization, because I liked that field because it applied to every industry, to energy, to pharmaceuticals, to consumer products. I didn't feel like it would pigeonhole me into a specific technology. Sure. So I spent 4 years at Carnegie Mellon doing process design and optimization. And I thought about teaching at one point, but I thought, you know, I should probably go design something before I try to teach other people how to design things. So I went to Eastman Chemical Company in Kingsport, Tennessee, and I worked there for 10 years doing process design and optimization. But I also did things like marketing and business strategy and quality assessment. So I had a really diverse career as a chemical engineer. And then after about 10 years, the opportunity arose to come back to NC State in a faculty role. In fact, they said, we want to hire someone who with industry experience to teach our senior design course. And I thought, okay, full circle. So I was able to come back and bring that industry experience into a teaching role, but also an advising role, because you know, I advise a lot of students who ask me things like, well, what is industry like? And what is a day-to-day life in of a chemical engineer like? And I can share that with them because I've had that experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, wonderful story. And the real world experience. I mean, we've hear it from like the co-op concept, right? Out into the real world, bringing it into the classroom, something that you can do, right? I mean, just extremely valuable. The other part of your story that, again, we hear these things a lot, but the power of internships, not necessarily always to find that job, but to find out what you don't want, right? You can be, yes. as you kind of illustrated, you can be chemical engineering, and how many different roles are there with that job, right? You can do an intern. That's not this one, but it doesn't mean I need to change my major. It just means I have to go and then I can pursue maybe something very specific or that niche within that program or degree. So we always talk about the power of internships, not necessarily, you know, I think people sometimes have that myth that it's like, well, that's how I'm going to get my job. And it's like, no, it helps you find yourself, right? It does bring that real world application to you, but is that what you want? Right. You know, if it's not, well, speak up, talk, go to a professor, say, hey, this is not what I want to do. What else is there? You know, you might not have all the answers. And definitely going to someone with like you that not just has the real world experience, but as you said, like all the different facets. Okay. You're doing marketing now. Like what part of chemical engineering did you need to do? You know, where how does that play a role? So, you know, how many different, pathways there potentially are, and how internships can really help find that passion, and ultimately what you don't like can be just as important as what you do like, right? It can kind of help narrow down that field. So the one question I had when I looked at your title, and forgive my ignorance, but Director of Undergraduate Studies, does that mean that you're choosing what is being taught, what books are being, what exactly does that mean? I'm very curious exactly what that title means.
Sure. So at NC State, in our department, the Director of Undergraduate Studies, I would say, is the go-to person for undergraduates. Okay. So I'm the resource for them for advising, for questions okay. about course planning, for questions about career planning. But I also am involved in the scholarship process.
Okay.
As I'm involved as the liaison with the Career Center. I'm the chair of the Course and Curriculum Committee, where we look at, okay, do we want to add new electives? Do we want to change the sequence of courses? So really anything related to undergraduates okay. is in my basket. And I love that aspect of my job. And I think it's really important that, you know, that a department have someone whose sole focus is the undergraduate program. Sure. Because, you know, there's someone else whose sole focus is the graduate program, and yeah. they do similar things for our graduate students. But especially at the undergraduate level, you know, you've got students who are coming from high school. It can be scary to, mm-hmm. to come to college and to think, you know, if I need help, who do I go to? You know, and so having someone who's primary responsibility is kind of the care and feeding of undergraduates and all aspects of their academic and personal life.
Got it. So this is going to lead me down a whole different mm-hmm. line of questioning, but what are some of the things that you look for, you know, if you are talking to students, you know, and you have the opportunity to talk to them when they're in high school, what are some of the biggest things that you think a message that should be received by high school juniors or seniors prior to going to college, especially if they want to study chemical engineering? What are some of the things that maybe they should ask themselves or make sure that they're prepared for when coming to school?
That's a great question. We have our engineering open house coming up in a few weeks, and I'll be having mm-hmm. those kinds of conversations yeah. with prospective students and their parents. I would encourage students to really challenge themselves at the high school level by taking those rigorous courses in math, in chemistry, and physics that will prepare them for engineering. Even if you don't get AP credit or IB credit for those classes, just the experience of seeing that material, engaging with it in high school, really helps prepare you when you see it at the college level. And so sometimes I think students are a little bit fearful. Well, you know, I might not get a high grade on that class, it might mm-hmm. impact my GPA. But, you know, as folks looking at prospective students, we want to see students who have challenged themselves, even if their grades might be a little bit lower, who have sure. taken those challenging classes and are going to be equipped to be successful when they get here.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if I'm hearing you right, like don't necessarily take the easy road, right? For the high mm-hmm. GPA, if you're not pushing yourself, it's going to show on a transcript and doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily put you in the best light at college. Is that kind of what I'm hearing there?
Yeah, absolutely. And okay. I guess, you know, depending on where students live, if there are engineers in their community, certainly just talking with someone who's an engineer, learning more about what they do, what opportunities are. You know, as I said, you know, my parents were in banking. They didn't know anything about engineering. I didn't know any engineers. I think I would have felt more confident and perhaps a little bit more prepared coming into college if I'd had some of those conversations just to catch a vision of what I could potentially do. But certainly, you know, if that isn't available or it doesn't happen before students get to college, the first year is, at least at NC State, we really try to equip students by exposing them to what are these engineering majors? What's the difference between, you know, nuclear engineers and industrial engineers, biomedical engineers? What sort of problems could I solve with each of those majors? So if you don't have that opportunity as a high school student, hopefully in your first year as an engineering student, you'll get some of that exposure as you are choosing your major or choosing the area of focus.
Yeah. And I know Dave, the other co-host who couldn't be here today, you know, he always brings up the fact that engineering, you know, you look years ago and it was like three types, right? It was very straightforward and it has just branched out tremendously, you know, all the different types of engineering that are out there. It's obviously a career path that even within those branches, it branches even more, right? So what, I mean, how many different engineering programs like NC State, very specific, how you mentioned, like there's that first year you want to be in engineering, but is it mainly meant to say, hey, what is that brand? What is that pathway that I'm going to go towards? Is it mechanical? Is it nuclear? Is it, you know, civil engineering? How many engineering programs does NC State have?
Let's see. So we have chemical, materials, electrical, computer science, mechanical, aerospace, biomedical, civil, environmental, industrial, biological, textile, and paper and nuclear. So wow. I'm not sure how many that was. I was just mentally going around the different buildings. And you know, some of those people may not have heard of textile engineering or paper science and engineering. Are those a thing? Yeah, they are. And so I would say most people, when they think of engineers, think of civil engineers, you know, wearing hard hats, building buildings. They might think of electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, and those are kind of some of the largest disciplines, but there's so many specialties and areas that didn't exist or were very small, you know, years ago. And so it's exciting because you know, if you think about the hardest problems that we have to solve, you know, energy, the environment, clean water, designing better medicines, all the devices that all of us use daily, you know, it takes a whole team of engineers with different specialties to accomplish those processes, to design those devices. And, you know, if you aren't even aware that those exist, then if they're not on your radar, then you might miss out on an opportunity that might be a good fit for you.
Sure.
And so at least at NC State, the first year has the purpose of just exposing students to these are all the majors and these are the engineering grand challenges. And these are how different engineering majors might work together to solve those instead of people focusing on, okay, I want to be a civil engineer. I want to be a mechanical engineer. We try to help students think about what problem are you passionate about? Yeah. What problem do you want to solve? And how many different majors might potentially let you get to that point where you're working to solve that problem. And that helps sort of broaden students' perspective and also get them out of the mindset, I want to be this kind of engineer, but rather I want to solve these kinds of problems.
Yeah. So, I mean, I love that because, I mean, let's be realistic. There's not many 18-year-olds that truly know what they want to do with the rest of their life. It's rare. It is very rare, right? But is it so at NC State, if you know, there's a junior that's thinking about being a civil engineer, so if they apply, do they just simply apply as an engineering major and then first year is kind of the same for everyone and then you branch out after year one? Is that how it works?
Exactly. So you would apply to the engineering first year program. And if you have a preference, you can say, well, my preference is chemical engineering. And the difference in that is that you would be assigned an advisor in chemical engineering if you have a preference. But you might just say, I really don't have a preference because I really don't know. And so there's a whole team of advisors who are familiar with all the different majors who can work with someone who is just coming in wanting to see what their options are. Mm-hmm. And then typically at the end of the first year, after you've taken calculus one and two, chemistry, physics, some of those prerequisite foundational courses that are required for every major, then you would indicate, okay, here's my top three choices, chemical, nuclear, industrial. And so then you really get into the major courses that sophomore year. And so we moved to this model several years ago, as opposed to the model where you go directly into a major and start taking courses in that major very early. And I think what's happened is that students are much more informed and confident about their choice of major, because before, lots of people would start out in a major because they checked a box when they were 17 years old and were applying, I think I want to do this. They didn't really know what it was. And then they got into it and realized, huh, that's not exactly what I thought. And so then they have to pivot. So I think coming into an engineering first year program gives students some space and time to explore their options, makes them more confident in choosing that major, and also results in less changes after the fact.
Yeah. No, I love it. Now, is that, I don't know every school across the country. I'm not going to put you on the spot and say, do you know, but is that pretty unique? Is that something that a lot of schools follow, or is it more that traditional pathway that you kind of have to declare what type of engineering you want to go into? Right. When you apply to the school, it's not something. I mean, I've heard different schools that there are schools that they don't like you to declare a major. They want to teach you to find your passion and help you just learn how to critically think and learn how to educate yourself, learn how to learn. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you can kind of find your pathway. But it seems pretty interesting. And I'm not sure how much it is across the board from a college perspective, the ability to come in and then have the school support you in truly finding the right pathway. Is that pretty unique to NC State, or is that something that you can find at a lot of institutions across the country?
That's a great question. I certainly can't speak for all institutions. And I know in the Southeast, for example, Virginia Tech has a similar first engineering model, but Clemson, students go directly into the major. And so, you know, it really depends on the school, the culture of the school, the history, and just sort of their philosophy of, you know, how they want to structure their curriculum. Yeah. So I think engineering is a little bit unique in that it's typically a very structured curriculum, which has a series of prerequisites. You have to take calculus one, then calculus two, then calculus three, differential equations. Whereas, say, a major in the humanities or even in the sciences has a little bit more flexibility with regard to when and which classes you take. For example, at UNC Chapel Hill, a school down the road, they have more of a general college experience in the first 2 years where people take, you know, sort of their general education courses. And then you really don't hold into your major until the last 2 years. So every college and university is a little bit different. And that's part of the exploration process as students might be looking at different schools, different programs, and which might be the best fit for them.
Yeah. And we always talk about the best fit being, you know, three categories: social fit, academic fit, and financial fit. You've got to nail those three to, we say, win at the college game, right? Like if you miss one of those three, things might not work out well. And I think that as you know, high schoolers that are building a college list, and when you're planning these different visits, like, these are some great topics to think about and kind of ask yourself, do you want to potentially, I won't say pigeonholed, but potentially start off on a certain track? And if that's not really for you, do you now extend your life in college because you have to now be there for 5 or 6 years versus potentially 4 is a very big question. But the fact that, and as you mentioned, all schools are different, right? Every school has something that makes them different from another school. And being curious and doing research and visiting and having conversations and understanding what makes them different can really help find that right academic and social fit. I think that is a great piece of advice that you kind of alluded to, that, you know, there are schools that are different, right? But find out what is right specifically for you, right? I didn't know that about NC State. I didn't know that the difference between Virginia Tech and Clemson, but doing your homework and researching, you might say, well, I know I want to do something. Clemson might be a good fit for me. Or, you know what? I have to look at something that opens a little bit more, you know, broadens my vision, my horizon on what I could potentially do, and a school that might assist me with that, which brings me to my next question. In advising students, I would imagine that if you kind of have this first year program, that you probably have to have a very good staff that can guide students in the proper direction, right? If you're basically saying, well, look, we want to help guide you. We know that there's these classes you have to take, but to figure out what branch of engineering you want to focus on, I would imagine that you and other administrators and staff have to be pretty good mentors, to accomplish that. It's not just, oh, here's your grades, you go this way, right? I'm sure there's, so what does that look like? What type of support do you bring to the table for those students that really might still be asking themselves, I'm not sure what I want to do, you know, after first year, maybe halfway through first year? What does that look like in your world?
If you didn't know, we're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Elite Collegiate Planning. Make sure to share and tag us.
That's a great question. You know, I've got a sorting hat in my office that I got from a costume store. And sometimes I say, wouldn't it be great if I could just take this sorting hat and put it on your head and it would say, yep, industrial engineering or chemical engineering.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a prop that I like to refer to in talking with students. But we're going through the process now of registration advising for our students. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've got a student who will be here at 10 o'clock who's going to talk about their summer plans and their fall plans. So I think especially in the first year, it's important that you really have a strong advising presence and resource for students so that as they're going through those core courses, they're saying, you know, do I like chemistry better or do I like physics better? Mm-hmm. You know, how am I doing in math? Do I see myself, you know, in more of a research-focused career or more of an industry-focused career, that you have time to have those sorts of conversations?
Yeah.
And it takes time. And that's why, you know, my role as being the undergraduate director, that's my sole focus. And so, you know, also I mentioned the first year courses that students take, you know, the folks who teach those first year courses are very intentional about having conversations with students to really encourage them to think about those options, to reflect on how things are going in their coursework, what they're learning about these different disciplines, which problems are most exciting to them. So you're exactly right. It definitely takes a lot of effort and time, but it's so worth it because students then are equipped and prepared to make those choices in a much more informed way.
Yeah. Okay. One of the questions I always like to ask gets down to, I'll say, the expectation versus reality, right? Kind of dispelling some of the myths. What is probably the most common thing that maybe students expect when they come to school? And then maybe after 6 months to a year, they realize, oh, this is not what I thought. I mean, specifically for engineering, you know, maybe if people figure out, oh, this wasn't for me, or I didn't know the course load, I didn't know how much math and science would be involved. What are some of the, I'll say, things that should be brought to light prior that you typically see where students may struggle or have an obstacle to overcome because they simply weren't aware of it. Is there anything that sticks out to you that you typically see students saying, oh, I didn't know that, you know, or positive or negative? What's something that kind of a myth we would like to dispel today?
That's a great question. The first one that comes to mind is that often students who are accepted to engineering are very strong students. They've done well in high school. They were at the top of their class. You know, they may not have had to struggle in high school. And then when they come to college, it's sort of shocking that, oh, this is hard. This is hard. And then they start to question, is there something wrong with me? You know, everybody else seems to be kind of breezing through this. You know, is it just me? And does this mean I shouldn't or can't be an engineer? And so just that step change from the level of effort that's required, and particularly the level of independent effort that's required outside of class. Because you know, many times in high school, you can get what you need from class time and maybe some minimal preparation. But I think the expectation in college is that you spend that time in class, but that's just the beginning. You know, there's an expectation that you read the textbook, that you review the online resources, that you review your notes and figure out, okay, I didn't understand this. I need to go to office hours to get this cleared up. And often students think, well, if I go to office hours, then they will think that, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. When in fact, that is the purpose of office hours, to help people who are unsure or unclear or hit a sticking point or need some clarification. And often those strong students were the ones tutoring other people in high school and then might get to college and think, well, gosh, I don't want to go to tutoring or you know, office hours, because that's kind of an admission of failure. When honestly, it's the better students who come to office hours because they want to, you know, they want to move from a B to an A. We're not talking about from a D to an F. And so it's just that transition of, I think, recognizing that, yeah, engineering is challenging. It's worthwhile, but it is challenging. But that doesn't mean that it's not for me. And it doesn't mean that I can't do it. And so sometimes people freak out when they see that first B or even that first C and think that means, oh, maybe I shouldn't be an engineer. When in fact, it just means, okay, you know, based on my background and my preparation and what comes easy to me, I might have to work a little harder than my suite mate or my roommate who seems to be breezing through this. Yeah. But if this is something I want to do, I can do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I always relate back to when I was in high school, you know, my hard-headedness, me being a 17, 18-year-old, that I used to look at asking for help was a weakness. Right. And I always had that perception. And as I have grown with age and experience, that asking for help is a sign of strength, right? To know that you need assistance or to just understand something just better. Or if you think you've got it, but just things aren't adding up, to go get clarification, right? The power of asking for help and the power of asking good questions, can really not just, and I won't even say it at the, you know, at the school level, but even in an employer relationship, right? And now, obviously, if you're asking for help in the same thing over and over, there's issues. But if you're asking for help and you're learning from it, I can tell you any employer is going to look at that as a sign of strength, right? You want to do the job right. Okay, now you learned how to do something more. I didn't know you could do that. I was shocked to even hear you come in and asking about that, right? And then you can grow responsibilities, right? You can move up the ladder. You become, you know, I don't want to say a jack of all trades, but you really understand more. And sometimes we can't always do that on our own. And I think that that is a great message to have, that it may not be easy, but it doesn't mean it's impossible or not a fit. It just might mean you need some help. And that's why professors are, that's why office hours exist. There's a reason for that. Take advantage of it, right? And again, I think that ultimately leads to what we were talking about earlier, the mentorship concept, right? If I'm coming, you know, if a student is coming to you office hours and you're having conversations and you might end up saying, hey, from all of the time we've spent together, this might be the right pathway for you. I've seen where you've struggled. I've seen where you excel. This may be the right opportunity for you, or look into this internship, look at this career path, because I think it's going to be a really good fit. Just some of the things that I'm having as takeaways that I think our listeners need to also understand. So great piece of advice there.
Absolutely. When students come to office hours, also, it gives me a chance to observe them outside the classroom, and it helps me understand how they attack problems, you know, how they think. It's a gauge of their level of interest in the class. And in fact, you know, if you ask me to write a letter of recommendation for you, and all I know is you were in my class, you made an A-, you came to class every day. Okay, that's great. But if you came to office hours and you asked questions, and I got to know you as a person, and I got to know a little bit more about your interest and your goals, I can say so much more. And so, you know, I encourage students every semester, okay, I want you to pick one professor that you're going to try to connect with outside of the classroom, you know, not necessarily with the motive of, I want you to write a recommendation letter, but just so there's someone that knows you and that you know, and that you can make a connection with, because college is not just about going to class, getting grades. It's about developing those relationships with your peers. It's about developing relationships with faculty. And in fact, we just celebrated our department's centennial anniversary this past weekend and had lots of alumni come back and celebrate with us. And it was just really heartwarming to hear those stories from students about faculty who, you know, made a difference in their lives, who impacted their careers, who stayed in touch with them for years after graduation and served as mentors. And so it all starts with just having the courage to go to office hours. So I definitely would encourage students to do that for all the reasons that we've discussed.
I want to come back to that alumni story because I want to ask you one there. But immediately when you were giving that kind of, you know, the idea of a recommendation letter, and let's just say that you have two students with the same grade, you know, they both get that A-, but through the office hours and through the interaction, you were able to understand, well, one person, all the obstacles potentially they had to overcome, right? What was stopping them? How did you watch them, you know, problem solve, right? How did you see them overcome those things that were in the way? Whereas the other person, you don't know if it was just cake or if they had to overcome the same obstacles. You don't have the conversations. You don't know. Again, not that we say you have favorites, but at the same time, like in a recommendation letter, you can speak to all the struggles this person had and overcame. This other person may have had those same struggles, but you don't know about them. How can you write about them? So that was just one of those things. It's, you know, I think about college essays, right? And if you overcome an obstacle in your life, that is can be a very valuable piece of information to a school to see how you overcame obstacles, right? That's a strong piece. So if you can have a professor that knows everything, how you overcame things and all the effort that you put in, that, guess what? That's going to be a great recommendation letter. So that was the one thing that was all that was really popping through my head when you were telling me that story. Then we go back to the alumni came back. Congratulations on the great feat, you know, on the on your history there. But is there any stories that pop into your mind when you think about someone that maybe you have mentored that you've kind of talk with these alumni, come back and you hear the stories? Does anything stick out to you from your career that's really like a highlight moment?
Oh my gosh. I can tell you lots of stories having been here for 23 years now, but two come to mind. One is a student whom I met when she was in middle school. She came to an engineering camp at NC State. And even then you could just see in that middle school student such curiosity and passion around, engineering, and she at that level was really interested in the brain. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, that's pretty neat. And so, yeah, I stayed in touch with a student. She came back in high school to one of our camps. She ended up coming to NC State, majoring in chemical engineering and with a focus in kind of the biomedical area. And she's now a PhD student at the University of Washington, where she is studying the brain, the blood-brain barrier. And she, you know, has achieved those goals that she had as a middle school student. And wow, to get to see that progression, and I'll just say it wasn't easy for her. You know, she had obstacles and struggles and doubts, you know, during her time at NC State. But, you know, we've stayed in touch now that she's a PhD student. And as a teacher, that's why we're here. Mm-hmm. We're here to encourage, to inspire, to equip people to realize their dreams. And I'll just mention one other person who came through NC State and majored in chemical engineering. I remember when he was a sophomore in my class and kind of the interest that he had, his desire to, you know, to make a difference. He now works at Pfizer. He has his PhD in chemical engineering. He was involved in commercializing the Pfizer vaccine, the COVID vaccine. And, you know, when I got my COVID vaccine, I thought, Charles Jones helped produce this vaccine. And I taught him in, you know, his sophomore and senior year. So, I mean, there's so many stories, but, you know, those two just kind of stepped out because they're people that I've kept in touch with and sort of seen the whole progression of their careers. And so that's why I love my job so much.
That's fantastic. I did want to ask you with your job and the ability to bring the real world experience, right? So you didn't go right from grad school to being a professor. You had those years that you were teaching. And I think that's extremely valuable. We had a conversation a couple of weeks ago about, you know, researching the staff at a school and seeing where they came from and seeing, you know, where they went, where they got their degrees from. And the fact that you can look at this and say, well, I spent, was it 10 years, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 10 mm-hmm. years outside of college and then was brought in because of that real world experience. How does that real world experience translate to how you teach? Because I think that's something that I think some high schoolers should be looking at as like a staff. Right. That, oh, this, if I just look at it and say, well, 90% of the staff that I would be taught by has never had real world experience. Right. That might be, well, let me compare that to other school. Oh, okay. I've got this staff that has spent a lot of time with real world experience. How do you translate that to the classroom? And is that something that maybe students should take a look at?
That's a great question. Certainly, I'm so thankful for that experience, because it really does inform the way I teach and the mm-hmm. way I advise. I can often use stories from my industry experience to help students understand what the expectations are for engineers, different kinds of jobs that they might have. In fact, I teach a professional development seminar class in which we go through their resume, their cover letter. I do a mock interview. We talk about different types of jobs, different graduate school opportunities. And I can personally comment on what those jobs look like because I've done those jobs.
Yeah.
And also in the senior design class, which I teach, you know, having an understanding of what the expectations are for the skills that mm-hmm. new engineers need to have. And also just having those relationships with our industry partners to sponsor projects that are realistic, that are open-ended, that are very similar to what a new engineer would do upon graduation, really helps make that course not just kind of a cookbook project class, but something real and robust.
Yeah. We're obviously dealing with a lot of change in our world, rapid growth when it comes to technology and now even AI and just different. I mean, where you look at even 5 years ago, how different things are now. Is that something that in your role with engineering and all the different branches that exist, that is something that potentially we may have to overcome, that you know, students that are studying one field, I don't want to say become obsolete, right? That's not where engineering, it's been the exact opposite, right? There's been certain, oh, well, let's have a specific area of study for that because it is so prevalent. But being able to adjust to those changes, is that something that students need to be aware of, that, you know, what you may think junior year of high school may be completely different 4.5 to 5 years later? Is that something that we're seeing that we need to, you know, just be aware of? Is that not necessarily prevalent in the engineering world?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you mentioned AI. That's that's something that I think is going to impact all the engineering disciplines. And in fact, it already has. Last weekend, I was talking with the co-authors of the textbook that that we have produced for the sophomore class, and thinking about, okay, in our next edition of that textbook, it needs to address the impact of AI, how chemical engineers might use this as a tool, what some of its limitations are. And the analogy that was used in our conversation is, what if in the 1970s, say it said, oh, you know, we're using slide rules, but these calculators that are out there, we just need to ban calculators because that's cheating to use a calculator. Everyone needs to use slide rules because that's what we've always done.
Right.
And so as, you know, as the technology has progressed from slide rules to calculators to computers to laptops to, you know, devices, and AI is just the next step in that progression. You know, we want to teach our students how to use it effectively as a tool, how to know what its limitations are, and to, you know, to feel comfortable in that space. And I have to confess that as engineering professors, we're probably more uncomfortable than our students are, because our students are digital natives. They embrace these new technologies. We're a little bit slow to come on board and maybe a little fearful, and because we're not exactly sure how that's going to look, but, you know, we're going to figure it out, and it's an exciting development for our field.
Yeah, I understand it. I have my kids are 10, 9, and 6, and my 6-year-old knows how to use an iPad better than I do. So feels a little weird, you know, when I'm trying to figure something out and he comes, Dad, let me see it. And he just pushes two buttons and slides something. I'm like, how did you do that? And he's like, oh yeah, I do it all the time. So I understand. As we go to wrap up, I mean, there have been a ton of great messages throughout this interview today. So thank you so much for that. But I always like to, you know, kind of give one last question for those parents or for those students of that are in high school. You know, you've mentioned a lot of, you know, push yourself, right? Take the right classes, even if it means that you might get a lower grade, but you are obviously showing that you are trying to pursue something. You are willing to work hard at something rather than take the easy road. If someone is interested in engineering, is there any other advice that you may give them? Are there any particular traits or skills that you typically see in someone that say that makes a great engineer? You know, is there anything like that that maybe you can give our listeners for one last piece of advice for today?
You know, I think one common personality trait of chemical engineers is that they like to solve puzzles. They're looking at, they're not intimidated, but they're challenged by the complexity of, you know, figuring it out. And a lot of times I'll tell my students, you know, this is just a puzzle. You know, and sometimes you have to take a couple stabs at it, back up, take another approach, you know, rearrange the pieces. And people who like that challenge of solving puzzles, and who always are looking for how can we improve this? How can we do this better? You know, there's just that personality type that is looking for how they can improve the current product or process, or probably going to make good engineers. Mm-hmm. And in terms of advice for families, especially as they have students who might be in engineering school, is to recognize that because the student is struggling doesn't mean that they're not capable or that they can't do it, but that it's sort of a common shared experience. I would also encourage students not to be lone cowboys and just say, I'm going to do it by myself. I'm going to do it all by myself, because that's not real life. You know, in industry, you never sit in your office and solve a problem all by yourself. You're right. Always part of a team. And so I encourage students to, you know, get to know the person to your left and to your right in the classroom, get their number, say, hey, you know, do you want to study together? Or can I call you if I have questions about the homework? And forming those sorts of networks definitely helps students feel like, oh, I'm not the only one that doesn't understand. Everyone is struggling with this in different ways. I might get something faster than someone else, but you know, we're all kind of in this together. And hopefully, you know, the engineering program is one that is collaborative and encourages teamwork and collaboration, so that students feel comfortable working with others, either formally or informally.
Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful. Everything today has been fantastic. Lisa, thank you so much. Listen, listeners, if you have a student that is interested in any type of engineering, I highly recommend, from our conversation today, take a look at NC State. Because again, if you're at the helm and the amount of mentorship that I'm hearing from just this conversation today, I think is something that is extremely powerful, and something that, as you said, if students are struggling, they need some people to be able to go to. And it sounds like your program that is there is there to help, right? There to help. I mean, again, right away, first year, it's an undergrad engineering program. Where they were there to help guide. I mean, that is a very, very powerful piece of information that I think every family that might have one of those puzzle solvers at the house, you know, and they're thinking about engineering in the future, I hope that they're listening and will give NC State a nice visit and maybe come down to talk to you personally, right? This has been absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much. Greatly appreciate all the insight and the wonderful, I call them golden nuggets. There was a ton of golden nugget takeaways today. Greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much. With that, we will end our episode today. And again, just one last thank you. Unless, Niall, did you have any questions, sir? You good? All right. So if you like today's episode, please make sure to like, subscribe. And if you have any family or friends that maybe have a potential engineering student in their future, right, please pass along this episode, because I think it's a great listen to just kind of have really good insight at not just NC State, but also just general, when you're looking for college, what are some of the things that you should be asking for? So Lisa Bullard from NC State, thank you so much. This was fantastic.
Thank you, Joe. It was my pleasure, and look forward to hearing from folks who might be interested in engineering. Feel free to reach out to me directly.
All the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for being a part of College Knowledge. Just a reminder, if you're sending your student to school, visit elitecollegiateplanning.com for free resources and to book a free consultation. Thanks for listening to the College Knowledge Podcast with your hosts, Dave Kozak and Joe Kearns. We hope you enjoyed this week's exploration of higher education, sponsored by the College Planning Network and Paradigm Financial Group. That's all for this episode. See you next time.